And we're holding on page Ches in Bava Kamma, Ois Yud Ches. We've learned yesterday about the Pasuk Kiseite Esh Ramos HaKoytzim, which describes the Avne Zikin of fire. And then we talked about the idea that the fire represents punishment from Hashem, and we talked about the role of the Tzaddikim and the Rishonim in it, and then the Gemara had digressed to some other related topics. So now, getting back to that matter, the Gemara says, Yosef Rav Ami Rav Asi Kamed Rav Yitzchak Namcha. Rav Ami and Rav Asi were sitting as Talmidim in front of Rav Yitzchak Namcha. Mar Omalei Lema Mar Shmaitza. One of them said, Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak, tell us over a Shmaitza, a statement in Torah, a statement in our state. Shmaitza actually means a statement in Halacha. So tell us over something in Halacha that we can then learn and discuss. Omar Omalei Lema Mar Agadja. The other one asks the Rebbe to teach them something of Agadja. Pasach Lameimer, what is he going to do? Pasach Lameimer Agadah, so Rav Yitzchak Napcha was going to start saying something of Agadah, V'lo Shavik Mar, but the first one who wanted Halacha, who wanted Shmaitza, wouldn't let him. Mestam, when we say wouldn't let him, it's Talmidim to a Rebbe, Mestam, we mean, he was pointing out all kinds of logical reasons why Shmaitza would be better. Whatever the case, he can't say Agadah. Pasach Lameimer Shmaitza, so he wanted to say Shmaitza, teaching in Halacha, V'lo Shavik Mar, and the one who wanted Agadah wouldn't let it either, so he's stuck. So he tells them, let me give you an analogy what the situation is like, where I can't teach either one because each of you is protesting and each one of you is saying that he wants the other one. A man has two wives, one is a young woman and the other is an old woman. Yalda malaketes le levonis. So every time he grows a white hair, the young wife pulls it out because she wants him to remain black haired, so he'll look young like her. Zkena malaketes le shchoris. Every time there's a black hair, his older wife pulls out that because she wants him to look more white haired like her. Nimsa kereach mikana mikana. He winds up being bald between the two of them. This is where the expression nimsa kereach mikana mikana comes from, this Gemara. So we're stuck over here in the middle. So what are we going to do? We want to teach Torah. Omalahem, so he tells them, Ihoch, you know what then? In that case, Emelchum milsa de shavi l'tayreichu. Then I'll tell you something that'll satisfy both of you. I'll tell you something in Torah, which is going to have a halacha component and a gadda component. This pasuk that we quoted before, Kiseitze eshu motza koitzim, where the pasuk says, if a fire breaks out and it finds thorns. Now, let's consider, again, the relevant parts that Rabbi Yitzchak Napta is going to use in his Jerusha is where it starts saying, Kiseitze eshu, if a fire breaks out in the passive tense, so not, it doesn't say if somebody set a fire, it says if a fire breaks out. And then on the other hand, it continues, the end of the pasuk says, Shalom Yishalom, Hamavir Asabeira, the one who set the fire has to pay. So what is it? Are we talking about fire that broke out on its own? Or are we talking about a fire that somebody started? So, Teitze Me'atzma, so the Pasuk describes that the fire breaks out and it encounters thorns. So Teitze Me'atzma, the word Teitze implies that it starts on its own, spontaneously. Shalom Yishalom, Amavir Sabeira, but the Pasuk finishes off, the one who set the fire is going to pay for it. So what does that mean? So the Agadah part of it is, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Olai L'Shalom Es HaBe'eira Shehiv Arti. It means Hashem is saying, metaphorically, it's up to me. I'm responsible to pay back for the fire that I burnt. Ani Hitzati Esh B'Tzion. I set a fire in Tzion. I burnt down a cause of the Beis Mikdash to be burnt down. Shenema V'yatzas Esh B'Tzion, as the Pasuk says, in Eicha, that Hashem said that Hashem lit a fire in Sion, and it devoured and consumed even the foundations. But and Hashem says, I will pay that back. I will rebuild Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash with fire. Shenema, as the Pasuk of Zechariah, we say it in Nachem on Tisha B'Av afternoon. Hashem says, I will be a wall of fire around Yerushalayim, and I will be a glory in Yerushalayim. So in other words, Samar Shah explains, and the point is, so the Pasuk is saying it in a passive form because Ein Ra Yoden Milamayla. the evil, the negativity of the Churban. In a sense, it's like it doesn't come from Hashem. Hashem is good, and only good comes from Hashem. What happens is that we mess up. We do chatoyim, and therefore that causes bad things to happen. So therefore, he says to Ish, it's like it's not even attributable to Hashem directly that the fire happened and happened because of us. Nevertheless, Hashem says, I'm taking responsibility. I will act as though I am the one who actually directly caused it. After all, Hashem did cause it to happen. He just... It is Hashem doing it after all, but even though Hashem could, so to speak, disclaim responsibility and say, listen, it's your own fault, Hashem is saying, I'm not going to do that, I'm taking responsibility, and I will rebuild it with fire. The Riach over here on Ein Yaakov points out furthermore, another way of looking at it, after all, is this that Hashem set that fire was after all meant for the benefit of the Jewish people. As we know, Chazal say in various places the expression that Hashem, so to speak, took out his anger on the wood and stones of the Beis Mikdash rather than destroying the Jewish people. So in that case, Hashem could argue, well, I did it for your good. What do you want from me? Nevertheless, Hashem is saying that, nevertheless, still, I, after all, did that fire, even if it was for your benefit, and therefore I'm going to, in the future, protect you with that same kind of fire. A lot of people got killed, but nevertheless, the Jewish people as a whole remained. Whereas if it hadn't been...
Set on stone.
That's the point. In other words, there's still going to be the Rishoyim were killed, as we learned yesterday, even Tzaddikim as well, because we got Kivin Shenitin Rishos Lamashkes. But nevertheless, the Jewish people in general still survived all of it, whereas it could have been the other way around. It could have been that Hashem would have wreaked more of his anger on the Jewish people, and the Beis Mikdash would have stayed intact. But he didn't do that. Instead, he took out his anger, so to speak, on the Doimim of the Beis Mikdash and kept the Jewish people largely alive. So now Hashem is saying, says the Riach over here, that Hashem could argue, well, I did it for your good, so therefore I'm not responsible to make it up to you. Nevertheless, Hashem is still saying, I'm going to do that. Okay, so that's the Agadah part of it. Continues Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha, Shmaitza, as far as you wanted the Halacha part of it. Well, why does the Pasuk phrase, again, we could ask in a Halacha Dika sense, why does the Torah phrase it that way? By first saying that the fire broke out, and then saying the one who set it. So what is it? Did it break out or did he set it? So Pasuk HaKosav Nizkin Mamonai, the Torah starts phrasing it as if it was his Mamon, that it's his fire. In other words, the Gemara had discussed earlier in the Masechta, we had a brief piece from it in Ein Yaakov, the question, when we talk about what's the halacha theory behind the concept that a person should be chayav to pay for the fire, for the damages from his fire? Do we look at it Ishrei Mishum Chitza? Do we look at it that it's the equivalent of me standing in my property and shooting arrows in the direction of your property, where obviously then I'm responsible for anything that happens because of those arrows? So the same way I set a fire and I didn't make sure to put up a proper fire break. Or is it Isha Mishum Mamonai? Or is it the same way? For example, if my shirt causes damage, then I'm responsible for it. If any property of mine causes damage, then I'm responsible for it. But the same way, the fire is my property, and therefore I'm chayav. The Gemara talks over there earlier in the second paragraph, a couple of nafkaminas between it. In any case, Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha is saying the opinion with the opinion Ishrei Mishum Chitzav, which the Gemara says over there in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, is hinted at in the wording of the pasuk. It starts by saying Nizkin Mamoina. It starts talking about as if just the fire is his property. Kiseitei Eish, the equivalent of, let's say, his animal goes out, so his fire goes out. But the pasuk finishes off by talking about him, Hamaver Sabeira, the one who set the fire, implying that he actively did it. Which teaches you, therefore, that the chiyuv that a person has to pay for the damage by fire is basically because it's considered the equivalent of shooting arrows. In other words, it's a more direct thing rather than just a matter of that his mamon went out and damaged. So that also explains the difference in wording in the pasuk. So now Rabbi Sachnapcha, with that, satisfied both of them. One point is, in that regard, also as far as this matter of Isha Mishum Chitzav, Rashi, now one thing is, when you shoot an arrow, then that's it. You don't have the ability to call it back. In the same way, if you set a fire and it starts spreading, you don't have the ability to undo that. In Hazinu, you have the Posikim, Shanoisi Braks Harbi, Vesoiches Vimishpat Yadi, and Rashi explains over there that when Hashem shoots his arrows, they're constantly, so to speak, in his hand, and he has the ability to not just to shoot them, but also to stop them at any moment. So therefore, in that sense, when we say Isha Mishum Chitzav, It means, even though we're saying, again, returning to the burning of the Beis Mikdash, even though the fire had already started, nevertheless, because it's Hashem's fire rather than a human fire, it could have been stopped at any moment, and it wasn't in the end, because, again, the Jewish people weren't living up to it, but nevertheless, we're still saying that Hashem constantly had it under his control, and therefore, Hashem can, so to speak of, as that yes, I'm taking responsibility, and I will therefore rebuild Yerushalayim with fire. It's also why, for example, we talk about in that connection, because it's something that Hashem could have stopped at any time. The Gemara mentions in Tainis, now the Beis Mikdash was set on fire in the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, but then it burnt throughout that night and throughout the next day, the 10th. So the Gemara says in Tainis, Rabbi Yochanan says, if I had lived at the time of the Churban, I would have argued that we should make the fast on the 10th, because most of the Beis Mikdash was destroyed at that point. The Chum say that no, the beginning of the Puranus is the more important thing. So this also, this matter of Isha Mishum Chitzav factors in over there. Rabbi Yochanan, who is the one who holds Isha Mishum Chitzav, he says, fine, it was set on fire on the 9th. The fact is, Hashem could have stopped it at any moment because the arrows are in Hashem's hand, and therefore the fact that it was burnt on the 10th should be the more significant thing. And in fact, that is why in Halacha we have, as we know, we keep a certain degree of the Aveilus of Tisha B'Av, the morning of the 10th as well, until Chatzos, is because of that. So the grammar is kiseitze esh, the fire breaks out on its own. In other words, it doesn't even require him to have been directly involved. But nevertheless, we still say he is the one who set the fire was responsible to pay, meaning that we say isha mishum chitzav, the halacha theory behind having to pay for the fire is because it's considered the equivalent of shooting arrows. Just like you can't say, I'm shooting arrows in my property, it's not my problem if they land in yours. The same way you can't say, I'm setting a fire in my property, it's not my problem if it spreads to yours. You say to ish means that it happens on its own, basically, yeah. On its own. But nevertheless, shalom shalom, I'm maveris abeira, the one who actually said it, implying that the very fact that a fire goes is considered that the person himself said it as though he actually shot arrows. Okay. Now, in the Mishnah, it talks about like this. We touched on this yesterday. There's a concept in halacha in connection with this dinim of nizikim of eish called tomun, which means hidden. So the Gemara learns from Pesukim. The Mishnah has an machlokes of Yehuda and the Chachamim. If you have something that's hidden, so say for example, so we're going to have an example of it in our Gemara over here. Let's say you have a stack of one kind of produce covered up by a different kind. Now let's say Reuven goes and burns down that stack which belongs to Shimon. Do we say then that he has to pay for everything that was inside? Let's say for example, so the example that the Mishnah gives is, let's say for example, a farmer might have his pile of grain, and inside the pile he has some of his farm tools. So now if somebody else goes and his fire ends up burning that guy's stack of grain and the tools, do we say he has to pay for the grain and the tools? Or do we say, no, he just has to pay for the grain because the tools are tamun, they're hidden? The Gemara talks about according to the Chachamim, who hold that he would be potter from the tools. What we would do is we would figure out how much volume, how much space inside the pile do they take up, and we'd figure out how much grain could fit in that, and he'd pay the value of that. But the value of the grain that would fit in that space is a lot less than the tools. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that. The Gemara mentions that, for example, the Mishnah mentions that, let's say, for example, there was a house that burned down. That's different. It's normal. In a house, you have all kinds of things that are in drawers or cabinets and things like that. So even the Chachamim would agree that whoever set the fire is responsible to pay for all of those. Anyway, so now the Gemara is going to bring a story involving David HaMelech where, according to one explanation, it has to do with this din of Tamun.
Why is the fact that the guy hid the tools?
Because in effect the one who started the fire can claim I didn't know that there were tools inside it.
He has no control over the fire.
He doesn't have no control, but nevertheless he has a valid reason. According to the Gemara, also the Chachamim learn it from a pasuk actually, because since the pasuk describes that there's a pile of grain, the pasuk says v'necho godish oyakoma oyasada, that a pile of grain or a stand of standing grain was burned. Why does it have to mention standing grain? Obviously wouldn't he be chayav just as much for that? So it teaches us, just like a field of standing grain, it's exposed over there. You don't cover it up with a blanket or something. The same way, the Chachamim learned from that, there's the Torah is pottering you for Tamun.
It's not normal to hide
things. It's not normal to hide things, but in any case, yeah, right. That's what we learned yesterday, or 2 days ago, that that one of the things that potter b'din ha'orim, chai b'din ha'shamayim, would actually be if a person goes and covers up somebody else's field of standing grain when there's a fire nearby, and that way he causes that whoever set the fire is not going to be chayav to pay for that grain, then that's an example of potter b'din ha'orim, chai b'din ha'shamayim. He can argue, I'm not the one who set the fire, I shouldn't be responsible, but nevertheless he's preventing the other person from being able to file a claim for that burnt grain. Anyway, that's how it is. The Gemara explains that the opinion of the Chachamim. So now, we have like this. In Sefer Shmuel, in Shmuel Beis, and also in Divrei Yomim Aleph, there's a list of David's Giborim, the mighty men, the top, the elite units in David's army. It has a list of a few people over there, and it mentions things that they did. In both Shmuel and Divrei Yomim, it tells how one of them, at one point, they were fighting against the Plishtim, and there was a field full of crops, and he saved it from the Plishtim. So in Shmuel, when it tells the story, it says the field was full of lentils. There was a crop of lentils. In Divrei Yomim, when it tells over the story, instead it says it was a field of barley. So what was it? Lentils or barley? That's one of the things the Gemara is going to discuss. Then the Psukim go on to say that at one point, it says, Some members of this elite unit came to see David. At that point, there was also a battle going on with the Plishtim. And David had a craving, and he said, "Mi yashkeni." This is Gemara is going to quote the pasuk. "Mi yashkeni mayim mi berbes lechem asher v'shoar." If only someone would give me to drink from the well of Beis Lechem that's by the gate. Now, on a Parshat level, Mephoshim explained that David is like reminiscing about his youth. He grew up in Beis Lechem, that was his hometown. So he remembered the cool fresh water over there from that well near the gate. At this point during the war with the Plishtim, the Pasuk mentions that there's a Plishti unit in Beis Lechem by the gate over there, so it's not safe. It's not safe for Jews to go there. So on a Parshat level, David is saying, you know, I remember I'm reminiscing about my youth, that beautiful water that was there. I wish I could have it again. So he's not seriously expecting that anybody should go and get him some. He's just saying like a person would be nostalgic for what he remembers from his youth. Anyway, the pasuk goes on to say, the Gemara is going to explain in a minute what a deeper meaning of that of what David was asking for. Anyway, the pasuk says that the three top members of David's army over there went and actually broke through the Plishti ranks and brought back water from that well for David. And then the pasuk says, David tells us both in Shmuel and in Divrei Yomim, David did not want to drink the water and he poured it out to Hashem. He poured it out to Hashem. There's one explanation. Targum on the pasuk over there says it was Sukkot time, so he used it for Nisuch HaMayim. He said, all the water. Yeah. So he said, how could it be? This water was brought at the cost of people's lives, and people were willing to have their blood spilled in order to bring this water. How could I drink it? So Parshat the Pshat is exactly that. David didn't seriously intend that anybody would go and get him water. He was speaking nostalgically. His mighty men loved David so much that they're going to do anything for him, even break through the ranks just to satisfy a craving of his. And he says, how you talking blood, the water that was brought at such a cost, how you talking we should just use it for stam drinking, I'm going to pour it out as a korban to Hashem. Now the Gemara is going to have a whole different explanation of what actually happened over here. Also, now, you have to realize also in Parshat Pshat, these two things that it's telling over there don't have anything necessarily to do with one another. You have, at one point, there was a battle against the Plishtim, and there was a field full of lentils or barley. And then another time, there was this time with David, and they're on the whole story with the water. The Gemara is assuming that these are two parts of the same story. So the pasuk says, "Vayisave David vayyoma." David had a craving, and he said, "Mi yashkeni mayim meberbes lechem asher v'shoar." If only someone would bring me to drink water from the well of Beis Lechem that's by the gate. Vayivku shloishas agiborim b'machne plishtim. So the three mighty heroes broke through the ranks of the plishtim who were in Beis Lechem. Vayishav mayim meberbes lechem asher v'shoar v'gomer, and they drew water from that well and brought it to David, and David poured it out in honor of Hashem. So, Maikom Eboile. So the Gemara is asking, what did David really want? What's going on over here? It can't just mean Parshat Pshat that he wanted to drink the water. Fine, you could say, as the Mephoshim do, that it means just he's wistfully saying or whatever, but still, so what are these, he knows that there's a Plishti army garrisoned over there, so what is he even mentioning it for? That's fine, leave it, otherwise somebody's going to call and then bother us again.
Yeah, they keep calling. Thank you very much.
Okay,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. So the Gemara's understanding, therefore, that water, as we know, as we had earlier in the Masechta, ein mayim ela Torah, so it means that David needs to know something in Torah, and the bird beis lechem, asher bashar, would represent the Sanhedrin who sit in the gate of beis lechem. We always find throughout Tanakh that the local beis din would usually sit in the gate of the city. So when he's asking, mi ashkeni mayim, mi bird beis lechem, asher bashar, in effect he's asking if only someone could go to beis lechem to ask a shaila by the Chachamim over there. So the question is, what was the shaila that he needed to know from the beis din of beis lechem? Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman, Tomun Ba'esh Kame Boilei. There was this question about Tomun Ba'esh. What happened was that during this war against the Plishtim, his men had burnt some piles of grain that belonged to Jews, and now he wanted to know, is he going to be chayev to pay also for the tools that were inside those piles of grain? So that was the question. Tomun Ba'esh Kame Boilei, Ikir of Yehuda, Ikir Abanan. He wants to know, is the halacha like of Yehuda or the Rabbanan? Obviously, he's not using natural names of Yehuda and the Rabbanan, but we mean the opinions that we know later on from the Mishnah that are in the names of Yehuda and the Rabbanan, respectively. And they answered him whatever they answered him, whether according to Yehuda or according to the Chachamim. They answered him whatever they answered. So that's one explanation of what happened over here. Rav Huna gives a different explanation of what happened. Yedishim disa'odim diyisrael havu. There were piles of lentils of barley that belonged to Jews. Because again, we have in one pasuk it describes that there was a field full of barley, and in another pasuk it says that there was a field full of lentils. So what it was is yedishim disa'odim diyisrael havu. There were piles of harvested barley that belonged to Jews over there. To have a matamli plishtim behu, and there were plishtim hiding out inside those piles of grain. Become a boyle. So now David wants to know, are we allowed to save ourselves at the cost of somebody else's mammon? In other words, are we allowed to burn down those stacks of grain in order to flush out and kill the plishtim inside them? Now, one way of understanding it, Tosfos says, and that's the question, of course, the koach nefesh is derech kol ha'torah kula. The question would really be, if we do, are we obligated to pay afterwards? On the other hand, there are mafoshim who learn that the question may literally have been, we know usually you have the big three, have a Zorah, Gilei Arayis, and Shfichas Damim, but there are places where it mentions that maybe Gezel is in the same category as well. So in that case, he may literally be asking whether we're Bechlal allowed to do such a thing. The Gemara has near the end of the Masechta, the Gemara has a whole sugya on this topic of Matzal Atzim and Mamon Chaveira. But anyway, according to this way of looking at it, this was David's Shaila.
This was a war
Right, but in other words, David wants to know. Of course, so according to Tosfos's way of looking at it, the question is not whether we can do it. The question is, are we going to have to pay afterwards? According to the other way of looking at it, he's asking, are we actually allowed to, or are we obligated to find some other way to flush out and defeat these plishtim, but not at the cost of burning down Jews' property? So according to that, the Beis Din, again, when his mighty men went and broke through the Plishti ranks to go and get the answer they brought back was, also lahatzlatzim amon chaveri. In general, you are also to save yourself at the cost of somebody else's property. Again, either that you're allowed to, but you're going to have to pay afterwards, or maybe that you're not even allowed to in the first place. Aval atam melachata, but you, David, you're doch king, umelach poretz lasis lachor loy derech vein merchen biyodcha, and as a king, you have the right even to break through people's property to make a road for your personal use, or for the army's use, whatever different mafoshim, vein merchen biyodcha, and nobody can protest. So you, as a king, have the right to do this, even though a regular person might not. Or you would have the right to do this and not have to pay the owners of the crops afterwards, even though another person would. So according to that, David was asking, he has a shaila, he wants something in Torah, he wants to get Torah from the base in the base lechem, that's represented by he wants water from the well of base lechem. So according to the first version, he's asking about Tomon, and according to the second version, he's asking about Lahatzal Atzmai, B'mamon Chaveri. Marashah points out, now, if we say that it was a matter of that there was barley of Jews over there, that explains why the pasuk mentions that there was a field of barley. And we'll talk about in a minute what about the other pasuk that mentions lentils. But if we say that it was a question that he was asking about Tomon, where is there anything in the pasuk that implies that he was asking about Tomon? So Marsha says what you could say is The Tomun question was also, this was one of those cases where you have one thing inside another. You have, there were Jews who had stacks of lentils, or had piles of lentils over there, and then they covered the outside of the pile with barley. So now the question is, if we burn that, are we going to be chayav to pay only as if the whole thing was barley, which is worth less than lentils, as the Chachamim would say, or are we chayav to pay for the higher value of the lentils, as Rabbi Yehuda would say? So far two versions of what David asked. V'rabbanan v'yitem rabba b'amori omar. That Rabbanan, or some say Rabbanan, said a third explanation of what David's shaila was. G'dishim d'sa'odim b'Yisrael havu. There were stacks of barley that belonged to Jews over there, but there were also g'dishim d'adoshim d'plishtim. Near there, in that area, there were also piles of lentils that belonged to the plishtim. Become a body of the who. So according to this version, David's question was, Mao little gedishim shall sa'odim b'Yisrael, litim lefnei behemtoi, are we allowed to expropriate and take those piles of barley that belong to the Jews to feed the animals, though the army has animals after all, horses and then mules and whatever else. So are we allowed to take the barley to feed them? Al manas l'shalom gedishim shal adoshim b'plishtim, and the deal will be that after we defeat the plishtim and get them out of this area, we'll take those lentils, which is perfectly fine, it's spoils of war, and we'll use them to compensate the Jews who lost their barley. So that would neatly explain why we have both barley and lentils, because he wants to know whether we can exchange one for the other. And according to the third version, the answer they sent him back was based on a pasuk in Yechezkel. Again, they're not literally quoting the pasuk in Yechezkel, but the idea that later on, a few hundred years later, Yechezkel was told to write Menavor. Chavol Yoshiv, he returns. Chavol Yoshiv Rosha Gzera Yishalim. He returns what he took as a pledge. The Rosha returns what he stole. The pasuk is talking about that you have a person who was a Rosha and then became a Baal Teshuva, and he's returning everything that he stole. But we also learn from that, Al Fish Gzera Mishalim Rosha. In a certain sense, even if a person pays back what he stole, he can still be considered a Rosha. In other words, you can't steal Al Manas that you're going to pay back later. So normally this kind of thing would be also for you to say, we're going to take their barley, and later on we're going to pay them with something else.
Here
obviously in the context of the pasuk, it means that he's doing tshuva, he's doing everything he could. What we're saying is we learn from the fact that it still uses the word rosha. Why does it have to say chavoy yoshev zeli yishalim? It means it hints to us this idea that you can have a person who fully intends to pay back what he stole, but nevertheless he's a rosha for taking it in the first place. But again, they gave him the end of the same answer as in the previous version. After Melech Ata, you are a king, or Melech Poritz Lasseth Loi, or Lachor, or Loi Derech, Vein Mochim B'Yodcho, or B'Yodoi. So therefore, so you would be allowed to do what regular people could not.
What does the word
chavoyl mean? Means a pledge, like a mashkon. So he takes a pledge. It's probably related somehow, but yeah. In other words, like this, the Torah tells us that when you take, first of all, the Torah tells us rules about taking a mashkin. You can't go into the other person's house to take it. You can't take certain things as a mashkin. You can't take kalim shosin by mekhl nefesh. You can't take an almona's garment. And if it's something that the person needs every night, you have to return it to him every night, and by day, you have to return it to him by every day. So here we're talking about this guy had not been doing that until now, and now he's doing tshuva, and now he's returning what he had taken illegally. But again, the fact that the pasuk sticks in the word rosha over there hints at another point as well, that if the person l'chatchila does it thinking, well, afterwards I'm going to pay back, or afterwards I'm going to return it or whatever, nevertheless he's a rosha for doing so in the first place. But they're telling him, for a king, the rules are different. So the Gemara goes on. So far we have three different opinions of what David's shaila was. Again, you have opinion number one, which is Rava, Omer Rav Nachman, is that he was asking about Tomun. Again, as Marushal says, the vote is that you had piles of lentils that were covered over with barley, and the question is, if his soldiers burnt them down, are they now chayev to pay as if it was only barley, or are they chayev to pay the higher value of lentils? According to the Chachamim, they would be chayev to pay only the value of barley. According to Rabbi Yehuda, they would be chayev for the value of the lentils. So we don't know what the answer was from the Beis Din and Beis Lachem, but it was like one of those opinions.
to pay the amount of lentils that were there, or the amount, or as everything was left?
No, just the amount of lentils that were there, plus the value of the barley on the outside, according to Rav Yehuda. The second one was, again, the idea that there are plishtim hiding out inside the stacks of barley, and the question is whether we can burn down the stacks that belong to Jews. And the answer is normally you can't, but a melech could. And the third possibility was, we said, that he wanted to use the barley to feed the army's animals and repay them with the lentils that they would take as spoils from the plishtim. And again, the answer is you're not supposed to do that, but a king could. So the Gemara says, "Bishlemen amandar mahani tarki." Well, according to the second and the third understandings, then we understand the continuation of the story. The pasuk says, "V'loy other David l'shtoisam." David did not want to drink them. So what, in terms of how the Gemara is explaining it, again, if the water represents Torah, then what would it mean? That David doesn't want to drink it means he doesn't want to use that psak halacha. Even though they're giving him a heter to do it, he's saying, I'm not going to avail myself of that heter. Meaning, Omar, he says to himself, kiven de ikka isura, since after all, there isn't isur involved for regular people, lo michali, then I don't want to use my privilege as king and override that and do these things. But according to the first version, according to Rava's version, that he's asking about the case of Tomun, what do you mean? He doesn't want to accept it. What they sent back to him is what they learned from their Rebbeim, either according to the Yehuda or according to the Chachamim. What do you mean? What does it mean he doesn't want? So my loy ovad David l'shtoisam. So then, in terms of that, what would it mean that David did not want to drink them? And the answer is, according to that explanation, it means that David did not say over this teaching of Torah in the name of those three mighty men who had broken through the ranks and brought back that psak din from the Beis Din of Beis Lechem. And it was like this. Again, what happened? David was saying, I wish I had a psak halacha from them. These three guys went and risked their lives to go and ask the shayla and bring back the answer. Normally, then you would tell it over in their names afterwards, that Omar the Beis Din, the Beis Lechem, such and such. Now we're saying, according to this explanation, means that David did not want to say over this teaching, this statement in their name. Why? Omar, because he says, Kachmakublani the Beis Dinish of Shmuel Haramasi. I had the Kabbalah from the Beis Din of Shmuel Haramasi, the Novi Shmuel, who was David's Rebbe. Kola Moser Asma Lamovis al Divrei Torah. Anybody who is Moser himself to die for Divrei Torah, Ein Omer Dvar Halacha Mishmoy, we do not say a Dvar Halacha in his name. Instead, the Gemara says, Amrinu Mishmoy the Gemara, he said it over as like an anonymous statement. What does that mean? In other words, he's saying, Pasha, these people, they risk their lives in an inappropriate way to go and bring a psak halacha. I know I said I really wish I had, but I didn't actually mean that they should actually go on Mesiras Nefesh for such a thing. You don't do that. And therefore, they in a sense, like they lost the privilege to have it set over in their name. So there's an explanation, actually, the Nitziv gives an explanation that the vote is, you do have, we know, for example, listen, you have many times in Jewish history where people were Moser Nefesh, I'll do a turtle. What about Hillel, for example, on the roof over there with the 3 feet of snow on top of him? Balabatish, you could answer when Hillel went up there, he didn't know there was going to be a snowstorm. I mean, it's not like there was a weather forecast. But then Nitziv says it's different when you have people who are on such a high level as he was, then they can be Moser Nefesh, I'll do a turtle, because the turtle is their whole Mitzius. But David is saying, these three people, as great tzaddikim and tamid chachamim that they were, they're not on that level, and therefore they shouldn't be risking their lives to bring over divrei Torah. That's one explanation. There's actually another explanation that Fakir, David is saying, they, with their mesiras nefesh, they made it that now we don't need to say over the Torah in their names as individuals. They're not yechidim anymore. It's like they themselves have become such a mitzius with the Torah that now we can say it over as a statement in the Torah, and like it automatically includes them. Okay. Fine. A couple of blocks later, the Gemara deals with more issues involving damages from fire and different other things like that. When exactly do we apply Tumun and different things like that? Eventually, the Gemara gets into that leads the Gemara into a digression to talk about certain dinim as far as what's called takonas nigzol. Sometimes the Chacham made a takona on behalf of somebody who was robbed that sometimes he's able to collect with less evidence or whatever than a regular person would. Say for example, you know, Reuven burns down Shimon's house, then as long as Shimon has a reasonable claim for what was in the house, he can't claim he had the Mona Lisa in the house or something, but the stuff they just stole from the museum over there in France, but he could claim something that's reasonable that he would have in his house, and that would be an acceptable claim. So then the Gemara, so that leads the Gemara now into the next piece over here. Amalei Rav Ada Breda Rav Ibyel Rav Ashi, Ma Ben Gazlon Mechamson. What is the difference between a Gazlon and a Chamson? Now, Tosfos points out, in Torah terminology, there's not necessarily a difference. When we have in this week's Parasha, that's Vatimola or it's Chomos, and Rashi says that it means Gezel, so in Torah terminology, Chomos and Gezel are the same thing. But in the terminology of the Chachamim, there is a difference. So what is the actual difference? Amalei, so he answers in Chamson Yohiv Dami. The difference is a Chamson would be, he forces the other guy to sell it to him, but he pays for it. Gazlon lo Yohiv Dami, a Gazlon does not pay for it. So the Chamson is in fact, the fact is he is over on the issue of Loi Sachmoid, which means exactly that actually. There's a mitzvah in the second Dibros in verse Chanan, you have Loi Sisave. That means Bechlal don't even desire something that belongs to something, to somebody else. But then you have, and in Yisra, you have also Loi Sachmoid, which means to actually take steps to try to get what you want. So like going and nudging the guy and offering him money and whatever and then bugging him until he's willing to sell. So that's a chamson of it. Well, a chamson does it by force. He forces the other guy to sell and pays him, as opposed to a gazlon forces him to give it without paying. The Gemara says, "Amalei." Sort of Ada asks back, "What do you mean, Yoy Domi Chamson Korislei? What do you mean? If he pays money, how can you call him a chamson, which suggests that he's doing something illegal?" The fact is, "Well, Amar Rav Huna, tell you of a zavin zvine zvina." Rav Huna said that even if a person is hung up and forced to sell, then the sale is a valid sale. In other words, exactly that. You have there's somebody who you want to sell your property, so you go and hang him, let's say, until he's willing to sell. Rav Huna says the sale is a valid sale.
The Pokemon that we learned about, the goyim would come to the yidden.
So there's a concept of sikrikun, right, where the goyim would force a yid, they were extort from a yid, the goyim would come to a yid and say, you either give me your field or I'm going to kill you. So actually what we had is over there, we had the Gemara had mentioned over there, we had a little bit of an inyakiv, that there were various periods over there. Sometimes we say there was complete yish. Sometimes we say there's not. The yid figures, after all, I can take this goy to court and get back what he took from me. So therefore, so you have dinim over there. If another yid wants to buy it from the goy, how we work things out, so it'll end up back by the original yid, and he'll get compensated for what was taken from him. Yeah. But here, what we're saying, the fact is, if a person is forced to sell, so there by the sikrikun, there's no sale in the first place. He's being forced to give his property, or the goy is going to kill him. Here, we're talking about that if a person is forced to sell, then it's still a valid sale. Now, there is, by the way, the Gemara mentions in that connection, elsewhere in Baba Basra, the Gemara talks about there can be a concept called Moidah. He can go ahead of time and tell some Edim that I don't really want to sell this thing, and I'm only being forced to, and now I'm still retaining my rights, and later on I plan to take this guy to Basin, et cetera, and that's valid. But if you don't have that, then the fact is, it's a valid sale. So how can we call the person who actually ends up giving money, how can we call him by derogatory term, Chamson? And the answer is like Kasha, Hadama Roitsani, Hadama Roitsani. The answer is it depends whether he ends up saying I'm willing or not. If he ends up saying I'm willing, then at least you have, then it wasn't the right thing to do, but after all, he did say I'm willing, and he did accept the money, so therefore you can't call the person who did that a chamson. Most you can say is, again, he was Ovan Loisachmoy. But if the guy never says Roitsani, and just you gave him the money and he was forced to accept it, then we're saying that the person who did that can be called a chamson.
What's so bad about Noah, the Mongol?
So that's the thing. In Torah terminology, we're saying that there's no difference between Gezel and Chomos. And when the Torah says Vatimola or it's Chomos, doesn't mean they're forcing one another to sell and get it and whatever. It means they're actually stealing from people. In fact, you have the famous Medrash that says that they're stealing less than a Shavah Prut. The Gemara mentions it in Sanhedrin, that they're stealing less than a Shavah Prut, so it can't even be taken to court. So therefore that was what broke down society, and that was what eventually what brought the marble, yeah. In this connection, by the way, they talk about the idea, you know, by Martin Torah, Kof Alem HaKigigis, David, so to speak, forced the Jewish people into accepting the Torah. Well, based on this, Taliru Vazavin, Zvini Zvini, therefore it is a valid transaction, and still we still did receive the Torah after all. The Gemara does mention there in Shabbos, there is Moidah Rabba La Raisa. On the other hand, we just said a person can make a Moidah, he can protest that I was forced into it and I didn't do it B'lev Shalem, so there was a Moidah Rabba until Hodur Kiblu, Mea Hashredish, until in the times of the Nes Purim, the Jewish people accepted it wholeheartedly, and from then on, there's certainly no excuse. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Choftes Tishrei. Let's see. The famous description that the Rambam gives of Mashiach, he's a melech, he's a king from Beis David, who studies Torah. So we're hoige about Torah. The word hoige, loimed Torah, would just mean he studies Torah. Hoige means that he delves into it. His thoughts are, the word, the shoresh hoga, hey gemohe, has a few different meanings. One of them is to think about. So it means that he really delves into it. His thoughts are constantly on Torah. So that means, specifically, the Rebbe talks about it's Davka, this hurving in Torah, this working so hard on Torah, that's what makes it possible for Mashiach to accomplish the Gola. Now, on the face of it, why? That's not the main criteria of Mashiach. Primarily, Mashiach is a king. But the fact is, the Rebbe goes on to explain, Torah Kodma La'olam, the Torah is before the world and higher than the world. The Torah is higher than all of the limitations of Golos, which is why before the first Golos of the Jewish people, before they went down to Mitzrayim, Yaakov sent Yehuda to establish a Beis Hodah, to establish a yeshiva over there, Lahaskim Beis Talmud, because only through learning and horving in Torah is that the Golos, therefore, cannot have control over the Jewish people, and therefore Mashiach is going to end this Golos and take us out of it, has to be part of his definition is that he has to be Hoyg about Torah, in order to be able to undo the Golos. Maybe in a similar sense as well, you also have when we know that Rav Shimon bar Yochai was Terosei Umnosei, and about him, Taka, it says that the Rav Hillel Parasher famously says about him that relative to hidden Shamas like his, the Beis Mikdash was never destroyed. Because he's on the level beyond Golos, so that from the point of view of his Neshama, the Beis Mikdash still exists now. Okay, continuing with halachas of getting up in the morning from the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. So we were talking about the point that a person should be waking up by chatzos and doing tikkun chatzos, and if he can't make it up by chatzos, then he should get up a couple of hours earlier. Then, now the Gemara says, in this connection, kol osik b'torah b'layla, a person who was involved in learning Torah at night, then there's a chut shel chesed, there's a thread of grace and favor from Hashem extended over him on the day. As the pasuk says, Yoyim mitzava Hashem chastoy, by day Hashem commands his chesed, over laila shiroi imi, and by night his song is with me. So when we have the song of Torah with us at night, then Hashem causes the chut shel chesed by Yoyim. There's an explanation. I think Maharal Shah says usually if a person stays up until all hours, then the next day they don't look, their face looks drawn, they have bags under their eyes, they're not necessarily in the best mood. But if a person is staying up late to learn Torah, then the Eibishta causes that you won't have any of that. He'll look just as good as he should, and his mood will also be good. I think Maharal Shah says that in one of the places where the Gemara mentions this point. Okay, such a person is called an Eved Hashem, as we have in the Pasuk, called Avdei, which we're about to say in Ma'arim now, called Avdei Hashem, Ha'omdim Beis Hashem Balevis, who are the servants of Hashem, the one who stands in Hashem's house, the ones who stand in Hashem's house and learn Torah by night. So therefore, so a person should have a rooster or an alarm clock just to wake him up by Chatzos, as we find Rabbi Akiva did, the famous story with Rabbi Akiva and his rooster and his candle and his donkey. And that was the point, why do you have the rooster, is in order to wake him up by Chatzos. If it won't, then he has to hire somebody to wake him up, or nowadays get an extra loud or extra annoying alarm clock. No, so that was the idea was that it would crow by midnight. Usually roosters crow sometimes closer to the morning, but sometimes they crow much earlier, even by chatzos, and therefore, so that was Rebbe Akiva used that as his alarm clock. Okay. Anyway, so now the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, as soon as a person gets up, so now. So now again, when a person is getting up, now how is he going to? B'derech hateva, a person is going to get up and I'm tired and I still want to sleep a few more minutes. So what should he do in order to wake up properly by chatzos, or at least for me to bein this before alos hashachar? A person should think to himself, who is he lying in front of? The Eibishter is there. He realizes that the Melech Malchei Melachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is hovering over him. Meloi chalaris kvoidei. So, and after all, if he was lying over there without in front of a boss of a melech boss of a dom who wants him to get up, he'd be in big trouble. So, kavu chomer in front of the melech malchei amlochim that he needs to get up right away. This is the point actually where the Ma'adura Kama, where the Alter Rebbe's original version of Shulchan Aruch starts at this point. This whole point over here about waking up by chatzos and earlier than that is that the Alter Rebbe added that here in Ma'adura Basra, again based on the Zohar and based on Sifrei Kabbalah. So this is a klal gadol b'Torah. This is a great principle in Torah and in the ways of the tzaddikim who walk before Hashem. Shivisi Hashem the Nevi Summit. Person always has to be mindful that the Eibishter is in front of him, because after all, the way that a person sits and moves and does things is not the same when he's at home versus when he's in front of a great king. And the same thing, a person doesn't speak the same way when he's with his family and whatever, like he would in front of a king. So how much more so? A person has to realize that the greatest king, the Malch Nacha and Lacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is standing over him and watching everything he does, as in fact the Pasuk says, in Yisosu Ishma Misorim, could a person hide himself in secret places, Vanilayer Enenum Hashem, Hashem says, do you think I won't see him? I feel the heavens and the earth. So when a person has that mentality, then right away he will feel a yira and a subjugation to the pachad of Adu, with pachad and with busha of Hashem constantly. What if it doesn't come to him right away? Then he should continue thinking about it until it does. This is like the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, a person doesn't naturally develop, a person doesn't naturally have an ability necessarily to summon up Abba Yira on a moment's notice, and he has to think into it until he does. And at that point, the person should also be doing tshuva, because after all, you should be doing tshuva shlema, because you should realize that as avedas are what are keeping this yira from reaching him. So as long as there's that blockage of avedas, then he's not going to be able to reach real yira sashem. So if he realizes that here he's trying to think of this and it's not having an effect on him, then he should realize that there's something blocking it and work on getting rid of that, blockage and doing tshuva.